With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. The Freeman Report and James Freeman on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, it is the 24th of April, Wednesday, 24th of April, 2024. Welcome to the Freeman Report. I'm your host, James Freeman. And coming up in the first hour of today's show, I'll be asking Sophie Corcoran if London's Met Police are guilty of two-tier policing, or is what we're seeing on social media and on certain news channels just dog whistle politics? Now, after I've spoken with Sophie, I'll be speaking with Voice of Wales. I know they were on the show yesterday regarding Tommy Robinson's court case, but they were actually in central London yesterday when scuffles broke out between police between the police and people out celebrating St. George's Day. Stan and Dan, like I said, were in central London. They were in the pubs when the Met Police came and they kicked everybody out of the pubs. Now, from the videos I've seen, and I'm sure many of you have seen as well on social media, it does look as if there were people there intent on causing trouble. But was there more going on that we haven't seen coverage of on social media? The boys certainly think there was, and they'll be talking about that with me in a moment. Then in the second hour of the show today, I'll be asking British MP Andrew Bridgen if he thinks the British government has been engaged in democide, which is, of course, the murder of any person or people by their government. So, on Met policing, as with most issues that cause a spike in social media activity, I think the truth is probably that there is some dog whistle politics being played out, but also some pretty dubious policing by London's Met Police. For example, according to Stan and Dan from the Voice of Wales, the Met Police entered pubs yesterday in central London and ordered them to close their doors. Now, this resulted in lots of angry people suddenly being forced out onto the streets with lots of police waiting for them. Now, if that's the case, you must question why the police would do that. Why move people out of the pubs onto the street when there wasn't any trouble in the pubs at all? There is also a lot of anger about what happened to Tommy Robinson, who won his case against the Met Police in the High Court yesterday. Stan and Dan from the Voice of Wales, like I said, were on this show yesterday as they've been following the court case with Tommy Robinson in London. Now, the Legacy Press is reporting that the High Court judgment was all based upon one officer in charge filling out the paperwork incorrectly, which is all very convenient. But it is clear that there is much more to this case being thrown out by the judge. Voice of Wales spoke yesterday on this show about how there were many things that were wrong with the order, like the fact that an order should not apply to a journalist carrying out journalistic work, and the fact that a journalist does not need to be to have a press association card on them to be able to carry out citizen journalism. That was all established in the courts. I had Tommy on this show back in November, and it was clear then that the order itself was totally ridiculous and very likely unlawful. Tommy was told he needed to leave London, and when he refused to give his address in front of dozens of the press, he was then arrested. Not only that, but he was pepper sprayed in the face for no apparent good reason. It was clear from the videos that he was not resisting arrest. So yes, on that front, it is clear that the London's Met Police are way out of line, and I'm not surprised people are angry. Tommy says he's now going to sue the Met Police, and I hope he does, because we cannot have the police banning people from an area, a whole city, just because other people don't like that person. That is totally ridiculous. On the other hand, reports last week that Jewish activist Gideon Falter had been stopped from freely walking about London because he was openly Jewish are absolutely ridiculous and stink of dog whistle politics. If you watch the full video of Gideon with the police officer in question, the only conclusion you can come to is that Gideon was there to provoke the crowd and then get it all captured on video via the film crew that he had with him. You can clearly hear the officers saying that Gideon was seen walking against the flow of the March for Gaza. And given that he was openly displaying that he was Jewish, all of this combined, along with the camera crew that he had in tow, meant that he was extremely likely to provoke a reaction from the crowd. Now, as I've said many times on this show, the top priority of the police at a march or a large public event is to prevent public disorder. That is their first and foremost job, is to keep the peace. In this respect, what the police officer was doing was no different, in my opinion, than stopping a West Ham supporter who is openly showing his West Hamness from walking against the flow of a crowd of Millwall supporters on match day. It is not that being a West Ham supporter is wrong in any way, but that person's actions are very likely to provoke a reaction from the Millwall supporters, whether intended or not. In this instance, it is the job of the police to stop that provocation from happening. Now, in this case, I'll go further and say that Gideon is a well-known activist, and provoking the crowd to get a reaction was the whole point of him being there. I mean, he had a camera crew with him filming everything. So I think, you know, there is a lot of dog whistle politics going on at the moment to rile people up on the right and suggest that the police are not doing their job properly. I think there's a lot of that going on at the moment. But then there is also a lot of evidence that the police are stepping over line and are not doing things properly, like kicking people out of pubs and then waiting for them with batons outside the pub. Don't think that's very good policing. I also don't think it's right that the police are telling people like Tommy Robinson that they're not allowed in the city because there's people marching that don't want him there. Absolutely ridiculous. So I'm expecting a very lively debate in the next hour. If you want to get in touch about anything on the show, to suggest a guest or a topic, then email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you're enjoying the show and appreciate what TNT is doing, get yourself over to your favorite social media platform and give me, James Freeman, and TNT Radio a follow and a shout out. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
Bringing you a world view.
I like to hear what's going on around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, over to Gemma Cooper, our UK news correspondent. What breaking news have you got for us, Gemma?
Well, I mean, the extraordinary story of the day is that the military horses that ran amok through central London, up to seven military personnel were training with a normal exercise from the Royal Household Cavalry horses. Something spooked them. Apparently, some builders moving concrete. They ran through central London, riderless, one covered in blood, or at least two covered in blood. And the scenes have been described as mayhem. Reports are coming out on social media and the mainstream media. It seems like this had never been seen in the capital before, of horses that are military trained being spooked and literally running amok through the city streets. So it's all ostensibly been resolved now. It's been wrapped up in the last hour or so, but four people are in hospital. The horses are now with army vets being treated and assessed, but extraordinary scenes in London during the early part of today. Also, Geoffrey Donaldson has appeared in Newry Magistrates Court, charged with rape and historic sexual offences. He denies all the charges. His wife has also appeared in court with him. They were separated by a court officer. She's charged with aiding and abetting those allegations. Both deny the charges. Further court date has been set for the 22nd of May. Huge media presence outside Newry Magistrates Court. And a major incident has been literally been declared at a school in South Wales. Two air ambulances, two ambulance support vehicles, and dozens of police cars are outside the school in Ammanford, Carmarthenshire. That's all the detail we have on that at the moment, but that's a lot of emergency services vehicles to attend a school. So we'll bring you more on that hopefully in the next hour, James.
Yeah, I did overhear the conversation you're having with Rick in the last hour on Locked and Loaded about these horses, that, and that it seems a bit surprising the reason we're being given for why these horses got spooked. But I didn't listen to earlier conversations today throughout the day. So what are people thinking? What are people saying that potentially could be the reason for this?
Well, apparently it was that the horses were spooked by some builders moving concrete around, which does seem a strange. I mean, it's not within the realms of possibility. It's possible horses are unpredictable animals, but of course these are army horses, which you could argue are more highly trained than police horses, and the level to which these animals were spooked. I mean, if you see some of the images doing the rounds that people have taken themselves on social media, one horse slammed into a Mercedes car, cut itself on the chest, another horse slammed into the front of a double-decker bus. Those images are really really shocking. One slammed into a taxi, another crashed into a rack of bicycles. There are metal hoof prints all over the streets of London. People were screaming, getting out of the way. Horses like that, they're normally trained to deal with pretty much every eventuality. So to come out so soon and to say that the horses were spooked by builders moving concrete, it doesn't really kind of fit together, because this is a routine exercise that the Royal Cavalry takes, that Horse Guards Mounted Cavalry take every day. They would have known there would be building works nearby, and it's a busy part of London. So the level of the reaction from the horses doesn't seem to fit the training that the horses get. And also, you know, four riders were thrown, two managed to keep a hold of their mounts. All the horses were spooked. Four riders thrown, you know, it's not just the horses that are well-trained, it's the riders as well. And it's a very quick response from official sources. I'm not quite sure whether they're palace sources or not. These are animals that are kept at Hyde Park Corner, just around the corner from Buckingham Palace. And as I say, the Horse Guards, the Royal Cavalry, are something that's seen on a daily basis in London. So it's not like they're not used to noise of traffic, noise of tourists, noise in general. So it does seem very, very neatly wrapped up. I don't know how we dig beyond that response, but the scenes themselves, I don't know if you had a chance yet to look at the scenes, which are now leading on. All mainstream media and social media is awash with these images. It's very shocking and not seen in the capital before, images like this. They're almost a little bit biblical when you look at the images of the horse covered in blood running down London streets past St. Paul's Cathedral. You know, Buckingham Palace Road was sealed off. I'm not quite sure yet if that's been reopened. I think it has. But strange scenes to be looking at on a hump day Wednesday in the UK here.
And how many horses actually then bolted?
Five horses in total, I think, are bolted. Seven military working horses in total were on the exercise. Four riders were thrown off. Five horses bolted and escaped. And then it was the five that ran out of control in London and in a considerable area. One was as far east as Aldwych. And as I say, two of the remaining riders were able to keep control of their mounts. Belgrave Square is where one of the horses ploughed into a row of bicycles. It knocked over an electricity electricity box, scuffs on the pavements. You can see the eyewitness photos that were taken of people just almost frozen in the street as this great horse is thunder towards them. It's almost like people can't believe what they're seeing, you know, people on bikes just stopping open mouthed, looking at these creatures, which are highly trained, big horses. They're not ponies, they're horses. It's really, really extraordinary. So to have at just before 12 noon here, UK time, official sources saying, oh, it was builders moving concrete, nothing to see here. Because these animals are so highly trained, was it something else? Was somebody deliberately trying to spook these horses? These are the kind of ceremonial arm of the cavalry. They represent the monarch, the king. They represent the state. It's not without its symbolism, what's happened today.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you've got to be careful because obviously we're used to dealing with so many conspiracies and conspiracy theories that you think some things are awry. But so I'm not suggesting that, although the first thought was, well, what else is in the news today that maybe this is not being reported because of this? But I think sometimes, you know, you've just got to take things at face value. But it does seem that it needs more investigation because, were any of the members of the public hurt in this?
And four people are in hospital. It's understood that actually the members of the cavalry and the household cavalry are actually okay. They've just been assessed for treatment. So the four people that are still in hospital, I'm not sure whether they are members of the public or not. These details haven't been released yet, but I do understand that the four riders have been assessed and been found to be fit.
Because that's the real concern here, isn't it? It was just some builders. Don't worry about it. When actually, you know, this kind of thing, I think it's lucky that actually a lot more people weren't hurt because, you know, had it been there been a march, for example, out on at the time, and these horses are ploughed into the people. So I think that's kind of my take on it. I think we need to hear a little bit more from authorities on what exactly happened and what they're going to do in future to make sure it doesn't happen again. Right, Gemma, obviously you'll be back for the second hour of the show. To the rest of you, I've got a great hour coming up. First of all, we're going to be debating whether the Met Police are guilty of two-tier policing. Then I'll be hearing from Stan and Dan at the Voice of Wales. They were in central London yesterday and they're claiming that actually the Met Police, what they were doing was closing down all the pubs for no apparent good reason. There was no problems in any of the pubs. Of course, that meant lots of people then spilled out onto the streets and the police were there waiting in force, being quite aggressive. They're blaming the police for the trouble we saw yesterday. So lots to look forward to in the next hour right here on TNT.
TNT's Jason Allbourne.
In today's Australian newspaper, a horrific hit piece was delivered against Julian Assange. With the headline, Assange's sordid tale of treachery, it reads, Julian Assange is a criminal, a fabulist, and an undisciplined, arrogant, workshy fraud who lacks an education while remaining a mannerless vulgarian. WikiLeaks founder is no journalist. Well, that's Alan Howe taking no prisoners, himself a history and obituaries editor, deciding to write a 9-minute piece to basically pull apart a fellow Australian as he tries to get out of prison where he's been locked up for 5 years in maximum security for the work of being a
TNT
journalist.
Is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Listen up!
Now listen, we gotta talk.
It's what we do best.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right. Now, we've heard a lot about the Met Police over the past few weeks. We've had that Iranian activist, Nayak Chortini, holding the sign saying Hamas is terrorist. And of course, the police arresting him to stop basically public disorder. And then the Met Police being accused of basically one-sided policing. Then last week, we had Gideon Filter, who's an anti-Semitism campaigner. He was actually walking against the crowd who were there to call for a ceasefire in Gaza, clearly trying to provoke things. And he was told he wasn't allowed to do that and he'd be arrested. And it was mentioned that it was because he was openly Jewish. So my view is there's a lot of dog whistle politics and a lot of kind of setups in the media going on. But also there are big questions, I think, over policing by the Met. We had Tommy Robinson in court yesterday. He was cleared for that order banning him from being in London because some people in a march didn't want him there. And I've also got Voice of Wales on later in the show talking about how the Met Police yesterday were kicking people out of the pubs onto the street and then they were waiting for them there in force. So lots of questions. And I'm delighted to be welcomed by Sophie Kokorin, who's a political commentator, to debate this question. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Sophie.
Thanks for having me.
So I guess let's just ask the obvious question. Sophie, do you think the Met Police is guilty of two-tier policing?
Oh, yeah, without a question. I don't think anybody can really doubt the fact that the way that they treated protesters yesterday has been very different to how they've treated other protesters of different political persuasions, for example, in the Palestine protests, or most notably Just Stop Oil, for example. But look, I'm not going to sit here and doubt that there were going to be people there yesterday who turned up to that march to cause trouble. My issue isn't with the fact that the police were doing policing. My issue is the fact of that as soon as it comes to, you know, when it comes to a Palestine protest or it comes to Just Stop Oil terrorising my local community, because they always find themselves around the area of where I live in Thurrock and Essex, because we've got a lot of the oil terminals. They don't know how to police. But the second, you stick an English flag on or you're openly Jewish, they all of a sudden know how policing actually works. And I think that's what people are tired of. I'm not upset at the fact that they are holding people to account who obviously there were people coming to cause a fight yesterday. But there was a very particular group that came to pick a fight yesterday, and that was the police themselves. You know, if there was one group yesterday that were looking for a fight, it was the police themselves, because a lot of the times they could have handled it a lot better. The police acted as instigators for a lot of it yesterday. And I'm not saying that there weren't people who have far-right views who were going to turn up to cause trouble. Of course, there was going to be. But the police were instigating a lot of it yesterday. And they use very heavy-handed, very violent towards these protesters. But they sit there and hold a water bottle to a person in Just Stop Oil who is quite literally holding towns like mine to complete ransom. And they are quite literally breaking the law very openly. But yet they can't seem to do anything, or they have no power, or they claim that they have no power to do anything in those circumstances. But the second you stick a St. George's flag on your back, all of a sudden, you know, it's a free-for-all.
Yeah, and, you know, I've watched social media, I've watched the videos. I'd agree with you that there were clearly people there who were, you know, I guess the only way you can describe them, and I don't mean this to be for everybody there, but it looked like kind of football hooligan type behaviour. They were there. I'm not suggesting that was everyone, but of course, that's the videos that we see on social media. So I think it's clear that there were people there that were intent on causing trouble yesterday. Now, Sophie, there's been a lot of debate about this whole issue with policing over the past few weeks, particularly around these protests in Gaza. Do you think some of the reporting and some of the arguments that have been made have been helpful, or do you think that this is part of the problem because it is riling people up?
Well, I think it's riling people up, and people are very in the know at the fact that the police aren't policing people properly. But again, you know, the facts are the facts. If you're seeing people chant terrorist slogans and all sorts of nonsense on some of these marches, and the police sitting there and watching them doing nothing, you can't then get angry at the British public for saying that this isn't right. So in actual fact, I know we batter the police a lot, and for some of their actions was justified yesterday, but a lot of them also weren't. And we have to hold the police to account in the fact that they aren't policing these protests fairly. And the rules they have to police protests should be equal to everything. I understand yesterday that some people were acting violently, which is why the police responded the way they did. But they absolutely, you know, they've got scope to deal with terrorist material, extremist material, which they weren't doing in the Palestine process, and they weren't doing with Just Stop Oil. You know what I mean?
I mean, with Just Stop Oil, I think, yeah, I mean, clearly their whole aim is to cause public disorder. So I think there's no question, is it? They should just arrest them and get them off. And I think the police, to be fair to them, have been doing a better job recently. But Sophie, I'd love to hear, what do you think about Gideon Filter and this whole episode that blew up last week where, you know, there was that video of him talking to the police officer and him saying, look, you know, there's a shorter version of this where it's just the officer saying, well, you're openly Jewish. And so, of course, everyone jumped up and said, what? You're not allowed to be openly Jewish in London. But when you watch the longer video, it's clear that Gideon, well, to me anyway, that's my opinion, that he's there to provoke a reaction and then to capture it all with his film crew who are in tow with him. What are your thoughts on that whole episode?
Well, look, I think anybody that suggests he probably wasn't there to cause a reaction is probably not true. In the social media world, everybody wants to clip things and get views, and to doing that, you know, a lot of the times, you know, people like you and I have perhaps done it in the past where we've gone to very left-wing protests just to video them and almost take the mick out of them. So that's probably similar to what he was doing, and to sort of show the extremism, like we would probably have done in some of the Black Lives Matter protests, for example. We would have gone there knowing full well that we probably wouldn't be very liked if we went there. However, that shouldn't, you know, he shouldn't be arrested for that, and the police shouldn't have made him move because of the perceived actions of other people. If those people
I see where you're going with that, Sophie. And I guess, you know, if you talk about in the kind of the right and wrong, the moral right and wrong a thing in the world, you would say, well, yes, there should be no reason why someone should be arrested for that or stopped from sort of walking in a certain place because of how they look. But how would you interpret that if we got West Ham supporters and Millwall supporters, and you had one West Ham supporter who wanted to walk against the crowd, a load of Millwall supporters? Do you think the police should just allow him to do that, or do you think they might stop him because that there will be trouble?
Well, I'm a West Ham fan, so I would probably encourage him to do that. To be honest, I think, you know, the police would stop somebody doing that because they know full well that individual is going to be subject to violence. However, is that right? You know, or is it the police's job to ensure that that person can do what they want to do in a free country without being subjected to violence? You know, should he be able to go to a street? And yes, if it's full of pro-Palestine protesters, and be unequivocally pro-Israel and exercise his right to free speech without being attacked by those people. And if the police think that he's going to be attacked by those people, then it is those people that would potentially attack him that should be moved on, and not him himself. They are in the wrong, not him. He's exercising his right to free speech.
Yeah, and I understand that. You're talking sort of the morality of the whole thing. But, you know, if that person is there and their whole purpose is to provoke the crowd, you know, if you were a police person, you know, policing that event, would you, if you had a choice, right, I can let this happen, I can let this West Ham supporter or Gideon walk up against these people, I know that this is going to kick the situation off, and then me and my colleagues are going to be put in danger, and also the public, because we're going to have to deal with a public disorder issue. What would you do in that situation, do you think?
Well, look, to be quite honest, if I was a police officer, of course, I'd want to avoid public disorder. That's common sense for anyone, and not wanting to put you or your family in those situations, especially when dealing with some of the pro-Palestine crowd who are obviously very passionate in their cause and, you know, haven't always behaved in the most appropriate ways. And we've seen across the nation, as soon as you sort of upset some of these groups, like we see in Batley and Spain and outside of the cinemas, they can very quickly and very often resort to violence. So I understand the police in that sense. However, their job as police officers is to police the law, essentially, and ensure that people have a right to free speech and that people shouldn't be attacked for exercising that. And to me, it's a moral dilemma. We're not putting the police in a very nice situation, which is why I hesitate, isn't it?
Because I guess their first priority in a situation like that is to keep the peace. Because if people get hurt and public infrastructure gets damaged, well, then the police are really in trouble then. And of course, it puts them in danger. So, I mean, I get all of the morality around this, and I get all the kind of people should be free to do what they want to do. But I do think in that situation, and potentially in a couple of others that are similar, the police are in a very difficult position, because their job is, number one, is to keep the peace, to make sure that people are kept safe, that public property isn't damaged and all of that. Sophie, we're going to take a break now, but when we come back, I'd like to hear your thoughts on what you think about these protests for Gaza. They've been running a long time now. I'd love to hear your thoughts on whether you think they should be allowed to go ahead so frequently, given that they've been going on for so long now. So we're going to take a short break now, and we'll be straight back right here on TNT.
Now, I've got news for you.
Give me the news.
Give it to me.
Give me the news.
TNT Radio News.
News flash.
Matt Boylant here with a look at your TNT headlines. Months after he was forced off air over a sordid sex photo scandal involving a teenage boy, disgraced British newsreader Hugh Edwards has officially resigned from the BBC. The UN Human Rights Chief says he's been left horrified by the discovery of mass graves outside two hospitals in Gaza. And the US Senate has approved a bill that would ban TikTok in the country if its China-based parent company ByteDance refuses to sell.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Right. Now, these protests in for a ceasefire in Gaza, so they've been going on for quite a long time. Obviously, the police got a lot of criticism early on. But to be fair to them, I did a quick trawl this morning and they have been arresting since January. They've been arresting quite a lot of people for covering their face, for holding offensive placards. So I think the police have listened to at least a little bit anyway to what the public was saying, and the fact that they were annoyed at the fact that there were a lot of extremists at the protests. But they have been going on for a long time now. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that it's right that these protests should just be allowed to happen weekly?
No, I don't think it's right for these protests to be allowed to happen weekly. First of all, it's been going on for a long time, which shows that those protests aren't effective, because if they were in any semblance have been effective, they probably wouldn't have had to go on this long. But they come out every single week. They disrupt the lives of the public, and it's just frustrating. It's a little bit like Just Stop Oil. And the thing that I find really frustrating about a lot of these protests is that, you know, when I think back to lockdown, actually, whenever I think about protests and think how those anti-lockdown protests were policed, how they were enabled to go ahead, and the fact that a lot of these protests just weren't allowed to go ahead, and even up to anti-ULEZ protests, a lot of those have been squashed because of various reasons. Yet we see all the time, you know, Extinction Rebellion, nutjob people protests and pro-Gaza protests are happening as a weekly occurrence. Yeah, it was so difficult for us during lockdown or to get a ULEZ protest because of the actual meaning behind the protest. And I think there's always been a massive, large amount of hypocrisy surrounding certain protests and not others. And it usually has something to do with the people that are partaking. So the reason why Just Stop Oil have gotten away with it and, you know, our St. George people haven't, is because the people in Just Stop Oil have names like Indigo Rumbelo, Tarquin. They all come from a very specific public group, very wealthy, well-educated, you know, upper-class group of people. Now, if you had those lads in those St. George's flags, you know, digging up holes underneath streets like they did where I was from, you know, sitting on roads, climbing up bridges, smashing up things, spray painting stuff, they'd be called people would call them now thugs, hooligans, you name it. But as soon as your name's Tarquin or Indigo and you come from an upper class family, all of a sudden it becomes from hooliganism and all of a sudden turns into activism. But it's exactly the same thing. It's just the different type of people doing it. And it's the same for the Palestine Fighters, because a lot of them are university students, they're very well educated. A lot of these people hold, even sort of the more moderate ones that haven't been arrested, hold quite extreme views. And if those people looked or sounded like Tommy Robinson and expressed a similar view, they'd be called Nazis, they'd be called fascists. And if those people looked or sounded like Tommy Robinson and expressed a similar view, they'd be called Nazis, they'd be called fascists, they'd be called all sorts of things under the sun. And those protests would get nowhere. But because they're well-educated, because they're from university, they're treated differently. So there's a massive air of classism to who is allowed to protest in this country and who isn't.
Do you think that I've seen a few public opinion polls which have shown that actually there's a majority of the British public that they're not against Israel. It's not that, but they are for a ceasefire. And they think that what is going on, the actions by Israel, is disproportionate. Lots of, you know, tens of thousands, I think it's about 34,000 civilians now being killed. We've heard a UN report yesterday how hundreds of bodies have been found under a hospital in Gaza, stripped naked with their hands tied. We don't know who did that yesterday, but I think the implication is that they found this after Israeli IDF stormed the place. So I think the implication. So there's lots of horrible things going on in Gaza at the moment. Do you not think that given that you know, these people should be allowed to protest, to call for a ceasefire, and that actually, if we didn't allow that many people, because, you know, we've seen millions coming onto the streets in London, then actually we'd be seeing public disorder, because, you know, it was one thing, you might say the protests are not working, but one thing they do is let the public let off steam on a certain issue.
Yeah, I think so. But I think, you know, if they were working, we wouldn't be seeing the same sort of protest now and still have gotten nowhere near closer to a ceasefire. And you have to question, you know, is it the British public's job to dictate how a country reacts to what happened on October the 7th? Because a lot of these people that are calling for a ceasefire in the UK would behave very, very differently if what happened to Israel from Hamas happened to Britain. Or I would hope that they would behave very, very differently. And if any sort of any of our our country's leaders suggest that they would not react in the same way, perhaps not exactly and to the extremity that Israel has, but have those same feelings if such thing occurred to us, then I don't really think I'd want them to be a leader. That's the problem. So I have a real issue with our country demanding that there is a ceasefire and things in Israel when it was not us that were the victims of what happened from Hamas on October the 7th. And I don't personally feel like we have a right to dictate how a country responds to their own children being kidnapped and murdered and all sorts of things.
I guess you can argue that, you know, the UK is sending billions and billions to Ukraine. So the government is demanding that we do something about that. So anyway, let's move on. We've got a couple of minutes left, Sophie. Do you think Jews are safe in London?
No, I don't. I'm a university student, and I think I've been in my own university and they're not safe there. Do you know what I mean? And I go to Queen Mary in London, so I think it's probably one of the worst for it, actually. And one of my classmates was a Jewish guy, and I could just see the fear of him walking through his own campus. And I would be in a class with him before, and the topic of national identity would come up, and he'd talk about being Jewish, and you just see the reaction from all of my other classmates, just disgusted at the fact that he was Jewish. It's so common across universities, especially in London. I don't think they are safe in London. No, I don't.
What do you think then, because I think a good point has been raised. I saw an interview, I can't remember who it's by, but it was with Gideon Falter, was one of the people being interviewed, where it was pointed out that thousands of Jews are actually joining the protest in London to call for a ceasefire. So it was kind of being pointed out to him that actually it's a bit foolish, you're saying that Jews are not safe in London, because actually they're part of the protest. Because I think that's why kind of people are saying they're not, don't feel safe, is because of all these protests. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think we just have to look at how things transpired after this event. Have you seen any Islamic schools been attacked in the way that and graffitied that Jewish schools were? No. Have you seen, you know, Muslim restaurants being smashed up in the way we saw kosher restaurants? No, we haven't. Have we seen mosques be targeted in the same way that we've seen synagogues? No, we haven't. Have we seen typical Muslims be targeted in the same way that we saw Jews targeted after the aftermath of October 7th? No, we haven't. So very clearly that the people who have been attacked for political reasons after this incident have all been Jewish people. No, this hasn't happened to any sort of Islamic school or anything like that. And obviously, you know, that side is involved as well, you know, and they were the ones that obviously came into Israel to do that on October the 7th. So clearly there was a targeting that's specifically Jews. And yes, we may have Jews joining the protest because a lot of them don't like the way how Israel reacted. But on a whole, Jewish people have been targeted because they are Jewish, and it hasn't happened to any other religious group in this conflict.
Yeah, thank you, Sophie. That was a great conversation. You must come back on the Freeman Report again. Personally, to sum up, I think that, you know, the media, and what I'm trying to do today is pose questions from both sides, because I think the media has a role to play in this. And I've seen an awful lot of dog whistle type politics being discussed on other news stations and particularly on social media as well, which I really don't think helps, because it almost like says to everybody that there is this side and you're either on that side or that side, and that you should be fighting the other side. And I think we need to get beyond that, because actually, we don't want trouble on the streets of London, and we want our communities to get along. Sophie Corcoran, thank you so much for joining me on the Freeman Report.
Thank you.
Right. OK, we're going to take a quick break now, and then we're going to hear from Voice of Wales, who were actually in central London yesterday. They were saying that some of the actions of the Met actually contributed to the issues that we saw on the streets yesterday. So we'll be talking all about that straight after this break right here on TNT.
I was such a young age. Everything changed. My name is Chloe. When I was 13, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. When I found out, I just didn't know how to react. I felt like everything was just kind of closing in on me. It just became a routine. Dad's doing chemo. I'd come home from school, wait for mum to finish work, and we'd go straight to the hospital, spend a few hours there, just draw. It was hard to navigate going to school, hundreds of kids, and I was the only one with a dying dad. He was diagnosed in March, and then he died in October. Towards the end, I heard about Canteen. It kind of felt nice to know that they had other people like me. They understood what I was going through, and we didn't even have to chat about cancer. In 2020, I became a youth ambassador, so I can help others the way they helped me. I've done so many things since I was 13. I've graduated high school, university, gotten my license, made a move across the country. Life now is just a whole lot more fun. Please give a gift today to support more young people like me experiencing cancer.
Even the thought of dementia can feel scary. It's why we put off getting help, even though we've noticed changes in our thinking or memory. But an early diagnosis can change everything, giving you medical help and a support system around you to help you live better. Start with Dementia Australia's online checklist, because the sooner you know, the more you can do.
This is the Freeman Report with your host, James Freeman, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, so we just had a great conversation with Sophie Corcoran. I think my conclusion from that is, you know, all of these, the reporting around what's been going on in London with the Met Police, I think there's some good reporting and bad, and also a lot of bad reporting. And I think there's also a lot of dog whistle politics going on, which isn't helping the situation. But you know, there is this big question of the policing by the Met in London. Voice of Wales, they were on the show only yesterday talking about the fact that the Met, their case against Tommy Robinson has been thrown out of court, and they're back on today because they were actually in central London for the St. George's celebrations yesterday. And of course, we've seen lots of videos of scuffles between the police and the Met, with the implication that all the England supporters there were out of order. That's kind of how it's being presented. But was that the case? I'm delighted to welcome back the Voice of Wales. Hello, Stan. Hello, Dan. How are you doing?
Good afternoon. Very well.
Yeah. Well, listen, thank you, guys, because I know you've rushed back within the speed limits, of course, from London this morning to get on the show now. So tell us what happened yesterday.
So we got to the actual speeches, and there was no problems really, was there? The vans were quite close to the staging area. The people were very squashed, and, you know, they could have been given more room. That was quite clearly obvious, wasn't it? The police vans were lined up along the side, so they were pushing people in, but there was no issues there.
No.
The speeches went all relatively nice, no problems, and then everybody moved on then down to Whitehall to the pubs, because obviously that's what people do on St. George's Day. They go for a beer and they celebrate.
And it wasn't, they went in different directions. So it wasn't as if, you know, a whole army went to one pub.
Yeah, no.
They split up because the actual meeting had ended then, really, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Speeches had ended with Lawrence Fox.
And we put a video up, and, you know, it was inside the pub, and it was all, you know, people singing and cheering, and it was all very high spirits, and everyone was just having fun and enjoying. And there was we know, because we were inside the pubs, there was no issues whatsoever inside the pubs. It was a great atmosphere. The issues came from, there was an incident further on up the road with an Uber driver and some of the people with the England flag celebrating St. George's Day. Uber driver hit someone allegedly on the bike. They run in the England flag to try and get this guy to restrain him for the police. The police run in, cleared out all the people as if it was like a rugby mall. And then that instigated, it just, you know, all exploded from there with cans being thrown at the police, pints and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the police then, they didn't need any hesitation to run in and start slamming people about, as we see the Met do to the right side of protest.
The issue was, as far as I was concerned, was that the Uber driver hit this chap with his bike, and he was an elderly man and he had blood coming out of his head, and they let off the Uber driver. And so that, you know, it's this British sense of fair play. Everyone then said, well, what the hell are you doing, type of thing, you know, letting him off.
Mm.
And there's a guy quite clearly injured here.
Okay, so there was that incident, and it clearly sounds like the police have misjudged the situation, or at face value, I think that's the first thing that comes to mind. What about the pubs then? Because let's not mention any names of the actual pubs themselves, because I know the landladies and landlords there don't really want to be in trouble with Khan and have him breathing down their neck.
Yeah.
But what happened? Why did the police shut the pubs? What did they tell the landlords and landladies?
So, well, they didn't even tell the landlords and landladies. The pub that we were in at the time, and so just to get it into perspective, before anything had actually kicked off, pubs were closed anyway. They had been ordered by the police, and we'd spoken to the landlady and landlords after the incident. So they were closed way prior to any incident. The pub then in question we was in, the police stormed in and they did, you know, hand on the shoulder, pushing through the crowds, you know, and what type of atmosphere and reception are they going to get doing that? Straight behind the bar, you've got 20 minutes and your pub is closed. 20 minutes and you're all out. And it was, you know, that authoritarian sort of attitude where they were dictating to the pubs that they had to close. Now, I know there are reasons why the police could go in and close the pubs, and that is if there's problems within the pubs, but there was absolutely nothing whatsoever.
No, it was good spirits, and you asked about the landlady. They didn't know. The first thing they knew is when the police went behind the bar and said, you know, 20 minutes, everybody out, bar's closed.
Yeah.
Then obviously she's informed and she comes downstairs.
Yeah.
So the landladies are completely innocent in all this.
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah. I spoke to three different landlords and ladies, and they said, you know, I said, why didn't you just tell them to get out? You know, you're trespassing, you're interfering with my business. There's no problems in here. Get out. They should, you know, why wouldn't you say that? And she said, well, the problem is that we lose our license. So I said, well, you know, the police don't control if you have who gets the license. She said, no, they don't. But they're connected to the councils and the establishment and the bodies that do issue the licenses. So they have to do what the police say. Even when the police are acting out of order, they have to do what they say. Otherwise, they'll lose their license. Her exact words were, do you think I want to be closed on this day of all days, this early in the day as well, when we could be making a ton of money, you know, especially with prices of pints in London, you know? So why would they want to close? So it was a forced decision by the Met Police.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, I think the police are normally, or they can be involved in licensing issues if there's been problems with the pub. So I guess, you know, the fears of the pub owners is real, a real fear of getting their license taken away. Yeah. Now, that incident where the pub you were in, was that after the trouble had started or was that before?
The one we was in, it was after. It started just further up the road, and then, you know, it spills down, because once you get one incident, the police run in, you've got vans, you know, blue light in. Oh, sorry. Can you see us? Here we are. You've got vans blue light in everywhere, police running everywhere like stormtroopers. So everybody turns to see what's going on. And when they see the police, you know, more or less rugby tackling people, whoever's in their way, pushing people left, right and centre. People are just standing around, just looking around what's going on. The police will walk past, elbow, smack, I got hit in the back. And people get annoyed, you know, people are seeing all this and like, no, what are you doing? Especially when you see how the police are treating the pro-Palestine protests,
yeah,
when you've got swastikas being marched down the street, you've got calls anti-Semitic chants being bellowed out on speakers, you've got slogans being streamed on the Elizabeth Tower, Big Ben, and nothing is done. But this, you know, there is an absolute double standard.
And I don't,
guys, I don't.
I mean, we just had a discussion about the protests, the Gaza protests and whatnot. What I really want to do is get to the bottom of whether actually the police, this is biased policing against, you know, St. George Day celebrations, as opposed to kind of comparing it to that. Do you think, because I've watched the videos and, you know, I guess if you don't know all the context of what you're talking about here, it looks like there were people there who were intent on causing trouble. Now, you know, when you get big crowds, even on the lockdowns, for example, the marches against there were always a few, weren't there, that were there to cause trouble. Do you accept the fact that there were some, even if that wasn't the majority, that were there to cause trouble yesterday?
I didn't see anyone who was, you know, there may have been people who may be a bit rowdy and a bit like, you know, shouty and stuff like that. But, you know, intent to cause trouble, you know, I'm not 100% sure.
You've got to compare it with a wedding where you always get one out of 150 guests.
You always get
one who's either wants to fight somebody or is too drunk.
Yeah.
And it's exactly the same thing, James.
Yeah.
It was a manageable situation.
And this is the point I want to try and make, because even on these Gaza protests, you've got a few. I mean, most people, I think, have been going to the protests actually are peaceful. And I think they've got a good point marching for a call for a ceasefire. It's not necessarily against Israel, but it's actually, you know, we need a ceasefire there. But there's always extremists on that side that the police in the past haven't necessarily dealt with. I mean, I guess, sort of listening to everything you're saying there, my sort of conclusion from all the information I've got is perhaps the police overreacted, because, as we've said, there's always going to be a few there that are essentially going to cause trouble. But it sounds like kicking people out of the pubs where they're contained, they're happy, they're just having a drink, singing and celebrating. Yeah. It seems that kicking all of these people out onto the streets and then you've already got trouble happening there. The police are clearly gunning for anybody with an England flag. It sounds like a big overreaction and pretty, pretty poor policing to me.
Oh, yeah. I'd even go a little bit more cynical than that. You know, the Met police were totally humiliated that day in court, you know, when the absolute, you know, ineptitude of the police was displayed and put out publicly on the mainstream media as well, saying how the police had failed. So the cynical side of me, and from what I've seen previously, thinks they needed these headlines. We've seen it in the lockdown protests where they've sent in, you know, a handful of cops into the middle of a group and they've caused a riot. And then you've got the headlines, protest turns into violence, blah, 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 blah. And that's the narrative that they can then run with. So the headlines, yes, they were far right protest kickoff when they should have been Met police humiliated by Tommy Robinson.
Yeah.
And they needed to shift the narrative.
That's a very, very, very good point. Yeah. Sorry, go on.
I think, James, that you said it was an overreaction. I don't believe so. An overreaction means that you can do it once, but it's time after time after time after time. It's in Cannes, London, with Mark Rowley, who are both as inept as each other, and they both hate patriots.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've listened, guys. When I was an MEP and I was out handing out leaflets in the towns near me, I've had several people. I had this little old lady. Her son was in the police, and she told me a story about how he, as a policeman, they'd taken this burnt out vehicle into London to set it on fire to kick things off. So we know this stuff goes on, and I've got no reason to not to believe this little old lady. I was talking to her for ages. We know how the police bait. I actually, now you've kind of presented it as that, because of course, yes, we did hear about all of this news with Tommy Robinson yesterday. What a convenient story for Sadiq Khan and the Met Police to be able to show that, look at these far-right loons here causing trouble in London, instead of the headline being the Met were out of order, in the case of Tommy Robinson.
Yeah, and also we spoke to, people, they're very clever. They know how to, you know, deal with the police. And we spoke to this lady You know, she didn't have an England flag on her. She was there for the celebrations, but she went to the police before, you know, as she arrived, before any trouble. And she said, what's all this about? Just to, you know, to try and pry out to them what the police's opinions of what was going on. And the police turned around to her in front of a lot of different people and the police saying, that's the far right. And that was the Met Police. The Met Police also put a statement out saying that the far right to gather in. So it's that narrative. And there is no far right in the UK. Well, there may be a very small handful. You could probably count them on both hands, how many actual far right people there are in the UK. So you've got the narrative. That's what the police believe. That's the orders they're being given. What they said on the doors is, look, we're just following orders. Yeah. You know, we're seeing so many things, you know, history repeating. And I think people have had enough. And how much more bullying by the police have the people got to take? Do they just have to take it? You know, at what point do people start to get annoyed with this sort of thing? And I think that's what we're seeing now, is people are really getting annoyed with the double standards of policing they're seeing.
Yeah, and of course now Tommy Robinson has said that he's going to take the Met Police to court. Let's just hope that that goes well, because I think the Met Police have got big questions to answer there in particular. But listen, boys, thank you for rushing back from London to get on the show. I think your contribution to this debate has been absolutely final as far as I'm concerned. I believe you guys, in the sense that this was a very convenient story for the Met to have on a day where they were embarrassed in court by Tommy Robinson. So thank you, Voice of Wales, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers, James.
Right, okay, we're going to take a short break now, and then I'll be back again for the second hour of the show when Andrew Bridgen will be joining me. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.